organising a conference with 700-800 people in lockdown conditions, if we can do that, we can frankly do anything. It was the most remarkable thing, and I'm so proud of my team. We just were still inundated with emails from people saying that was fantastic. So we pulled this conference off, and we had to learn to edit videos and, you know, to do all kinds of things. And so that's why I'd really like to think that we kind of reflect our members. You know, they had challenges, they had to adapt and do things that they've never done before, but you know, you just have to get on and do it.
That's Bridget Shine of IPG, the Independent Publishers Guild in the UK. We're going to be talking about publishing in the UK and how people there are coping with the pandemic. But before that, let me welcome you to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. I'm an independent publisher and your host, Peter Goodman of Stonebridge Press. This podcast is brought to you by IBPA, the Independent Book Publishers Association, which you can reach at ibpa-online.org. IBPA's mission is to help you become a better publisher through advocacy, education, and tools for success. If you're not a member, consider joining and becoming part of the IBPA family. And now let's get started. So as I mentioned today, we're speaking with Bridget Shine. She is the chief executive of the Independent Publishers Guild, or IPG, which is located in the UK. Welcome, Bridget. Thanks for coming by.
I'm delighted to be here, Peter. Thank you so much for asking me to join you.
IBPA is a organization of about 3,500 members, and I would say most of them are very small-sized publishers, still consider themselves independent publishers. I'm not sure that IPG is an exact equivalent in the UK. Tell me a little bit about IPG and what your mission is.
Yeah, so we are a little different in that, sadly, we don't have 3,500 members yet, but we're ambitious and hopefully we'll achieve that. So we have 650 members, and we represent independent publishers of all shapes and sizes. So from international heavyweights like Cambridge University Press, Bloomsbury Publishing, you know, publishers of Harry Potter, Faber and Faber, very well known for T.S. Eliot, you know, very literary fiction, and sort of medium-sized owner-managed companies. And then we do have hundreds of startups of small independent publishers. So it is a great mix. I mean, you know, so we've got some publishers who have turnovers of, you know, in the region of $180 million, if you like. Those are few and far between. And then we'll have some people who basically are just about to start publishing their first book in 2021.
So that is a very broad range then. How do you exactly define what's an independent publisher? Who gets left out of that mix?
Yes, exactly. So I should tell you, Peter, that we are all encompassing. We are very welcoming. And the IPG has been going since 1962. So we will be 60 in 2022. And obviously our memorandum and articles association, so basically our rules book, when we started that, I don't think that the owners, you know, the people running it, not the owners rather, but the members, the people around the board table, ever thought that there would be companies that would be, you know, of that size who'd want to join the IPG. So we do have a very loose definition. We don't actually define in our rule book of what is an independent publisher. To be an IPG member, it's if somebody or if an organization is contributing to the industry, if that makes sense. And, you know, I mean, obviously we wouldn't have Penguin Random House, for example, you know, or Elsevier, you know, the biggest, the top five publishers in the world sort of thing. But really, anybody else who is, who is contributing. And what I would say is a lot of our bigger publishers are amazing at what they give to our other members in terms of best practice, sharing information. And really, you know, what defines an IPG member, I would like to think, is that generosity of spirit, that independent spirit. There's a fantastic entrepreneurial flair amongst our members, and this sort of, I guess, the three C's, you know, we're all about community, collegiality, if that's such a word.
Yeah, sure. Well, in that sense, you sound very similar, at least in spirit, to IBPA, so very simpatico there. How is everyone holding up with the COVID-19? You're probably going through very similar things as we are here in the States.
Obviously, we had lockdown sort of mid-March, or 24th of March, actually, so perhaps a little bit later. And so obviously there was this rush to work from home and to for people to, you know, close off, shut up shop, so to speak, shut up the offices. However, you know, again, for our smaller members, most people would have been working from home. I mean, the IPG, there are four of us who work full time. We've got another two on a job share and a few other freelance members of the team. We've always worked from home. So, you know, in that spirit of being able to adapt, I think our members responded very well, actually. And again, for us as a trade association, we put together lots of really good information about best practice and how to stay together. And, you know, and obviously we collated all the government information about the latest offerings. So what the government did, and they did move very quickly, but obviously it was a big broad brush they moved. So basically they just went, okay, you can furlough staff and the government will pay those salaries, you know, capped at X amount of money. And so across the industry, there was widespread furloughing. And as you can imagine in publishing, that's not always so simple to sort of implement, in the sense that if you furlough all your staff, okay, you're reserving your cash, the government's paying, that's all very well and good, but it does mean that, you know, editorial and sales, you're always working ahead, aren't we? We're a very forward-looking industry, aren't we?
Sure.
So, you know, 14, 18 you're working months, on books, yeah. But exactly, so it has that, you know, so obviously that had some challenges, but the government has actually, as of this week, changed things so that you can now, you know, have part-time furloughing, because it was just this massive, everything or nothing. But in terms of the industry, so obviously everything ground to a halt, bookshops shut. You know, Waterstones is our biggest book chain, and they closed down. Our at the moment, one and only wholesaler, Gardeners, they shut up shop for a while. They have reopened. The bookshops are all now reopening. So Waterstones is opened. The smaller independent bookshops, they're now opening.
Here in the States, a new startup called Bookshop.org jumped in to help a lot of the indie booksellers who were no longer open but still had orders to fill and wanted to be able to service their local customers. I understand they're moving into the UK now. Have you had anything like that, or
not yet? So that's very interesting, because I'm not aware of that. I mean, obviously the big online retailers, the biggest online retailer who begins with an A,
yes,
you know, people were obviously looking to them. But again, books were not classed as an essential item in the first instance, so they weren't prioritizing books. Orders, so that was again tricky. So those of my members who did really well are those who basically sell direct from their website, who use print on demand, who, you know, who just have a very digital first sort of business format. Because the thing I should have already said about the IPG is we are this broad church in terms of size, but we're also really varied in terms of publishing genre. So we have trade publishers, we have children's publishers, we have academic, and we have educational publishers, and we have a lot of what we call specialist consumer. So that means arts and crafts and, you know, something specialist. And those publishers, those specialists, and a lot of independent publishers tend to be specialists. And by that, I mean they are excellent in their category, and they're specialized, and they're sort of global in outlook and reach. But they will be very close to their consumers, to their customers. They will probably have a database and be selling direct and all that sort of thing. So, you know, and what I would say about our members, and that's why, you know, I'm privileged to do what I do, our members are very entrepreneurial. So people have to adapt and change the way and find solutions. Most of the distributors stayed open. One or two, I mean, obviously they went down to sort of reduced hours, etc. And as I say, the Gardeners, our wholesalers, opened up after about 2 weeks or so, again, on limited time. So things picked up, but, you know, it was a hairy, hairy 6 weeks, I would say.
Yeah, I imagine. Have you had to field a lot of questions about the economic challenges and things like government subsidies and support?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But, I mean, to me, that is what we were there for. So we immediately, right, you know, got to ground. And we have close ties with sort of civil servants who sort of represent the publishing sector. And so they would send us stuff and we would collate it. And I mean, we've had the most wonderful emails from members saying, you were the go-to place for information about COVID-19 and what to do. So obviously anything about small business loans, anything about sort of, you know, furloughing, any government support or anything else around it. And I'm sure it's the same in the States, Peter, but in the UK, there was this great feeling, this rush to help people, this need. And, and it was really powerful in the sense of people really wanted to help each other. So we set up immediately what we call a buddy project. So therefore, people could help one another and share what they're doing, because obviously for a lot of our publishers, you know, they had really practical decisions to make immediately, like, this book is scheduled for publication next month. Do we go ahead? Do we postpone it to the autumn? And it's been fascinating because lots of people did make different decisions on that. Right. But what I can tell you is, you know, in the fall, there is an awful lot of backloading of content of books coming out because they've been pushed back.
Yes, same thing here, yeah.
Those books have actually done better by coming out now. And, you know, again, in terms of moving, so I'll give you an example for us. Early March, you know, we have a huge stand. We have two stands at London Book Fair that got cancelled with incredibly short notice. So I could see where the land lay, that our spring conference that was scheduled to take place in May, that it was highly unlikely that was going to happen. So straight away, we started thinking about, okay, we'll do a virtual conference. And because, you know, it's about our brand as well as the IPG, and we are there to support our members. So I wanted us to do something that was slick. My team take great pride in producing fantastic, really well-run conferences. And so we knew that we've never done a virtual conference. And I'm not talking about a webinar. I'm talking about really a lovely virtual platform with great, you know, just we've never done anything like that before. So I just feel that we, you know, organizing a conference with 700-800 people in lockdown conditions, if we can do that, we can frankly do anything. It was the most remarkable thing. And I'm so proud of my team because, you know, we're still inundated with emails from people saying, that was fantastic. So we pulled this conference off and we had to learn to edit videos and, you know, to do all kinds of things. And so that's why I'd really like to think that we kind of reflect our members. You know, they had challenges. They had to adapt and do things that they've never done before. But, you just have to get on and do it. And lots of people said to us, thank you so much for not cancelling your conference, because I just sort of felt, you know, we have a duty to help our members to provide great content. And so we did obviously flip some of the content. So we had lots of publishers talking about their COVID-19 strategy and how they've adapted. And that was quite interesting.
Brings up one point that I've been talking about with people too, is that the these new skills that we're having to develop, virtual conferencing, doing things on the fly, assembling people who aren't actually in the same place and making that all happen, and figuring out how to monetize these things when they have to be monetized. Those were things that were probably on the verge of happening anyway as part of our normal evolution technologically. Absolutely. And as a society, but it's all been accelerated because of this, the pandemic. Yeah, it's kind of out of necessity. We've had to learn these tools. And I don't think they're going to go away. I don't think that they're just going to be temporary stopgap measures and everything is going to go back to normal. Problem is, nobody knows what normal is going to be in a year from now.
I think for us, it's been fantastic, Peter, because, you know, for us, as far as I'm concerned, we've future-proofed our events program. And I just think that we're able to reach more people. So going forward, post-COVID-19, we will offer a blended approach to our events, and I'm sure that will be the thing that most people will do.
Yes, I think it's people are taking this and turning it into a positive because they have to.
Yeah, I kept saying to my team, you know, we've got to find the opportunities amongst these challenges. Yeah. And it was exhilarating, you know, and we had lots of, we have a really great friendship with Australian Publishers Association. And so we opened our conference out so their members could have access to it too. So, you know, in terms of international collaboration, I think I mentioned 3 C's earlier and I only said 2. I'm obviously can't count, but, you know, I was talking about community collaboration and that other C that I think I already mentioned, but there is just a wonderful spirit, you know, in our industry, I think, Peter, you know, it's across borders, isn't it, about helping one another and sharing best practice. And that's one thing, you know, about meeting up. So book fairs, for example. So the IBPA, I know you guys have exhibited at Frankfurt for about more than 30 years.
Not this year.
But not this year, exactly. Not this year, and nor will we. And, you know, so it is a great shame that we can't meet in person. I mean, there's no substitute for, you know, having a cup of tea, a cup of coffee with someone and chewing the fat. And, you know, that bond that you make, you know, you can do amazing things online and with digital. And, you know, and that's why I think going forward, there will be a blended approach. However, I really think that until that vaccine is produced, and realistically, I cannot see that happening or being, you know, available for the masses until late in 2021. You know, I just can't see that, certainly for us in the UK, that we'll be having physical events and bringing people together in that way, which for us, we're all about bringing people together. That's the events we run. And I was speaking to somebody who is a big American-owned company the other day, and they said, you know, that they have a zero-based approach to international travel, and they probably will do in 2021. So what's going to happen on that front?
Well, I mean, some things, of course, will remain the same. Assuming that we get through the pandemic, there's a vaccine, and we've mastered the new technologies and ways of interacting. So we'll have kind of a hybrid of physical and digital, as you say. Maybe we'll even have holograms so we don't feel quite as virtual talking to people. But, you know, a lot of the challenges are going to remain. And, you know, I'm thinking in terms of, you know, economics, small presses being able to produce books at a reasonable cost, the margins that the stores and the distributors require, those are putting increased pressure on people. People are going to have a lot less cash in reserve, having expended a lot of it during this period of crisis. Correct. That's one challenge. And I'm also interested in what you think about changes in reading habits. You know, books as a not as a commodity. Every book is different, but books as a product versus, say, magazines, blogs. People are reading, to my mind, people are reading as much as they ever did, if not more, because information is so accessible and you can find items that are of personal interest to you so easily, but you're not necessarily paying for it. You're not necessarily reading long form writing. Everything is in very short bursts. How do you folks see it over there?
A very good point, because obviously, you know, it's the value of good content and all the work that goes into that. And yes, what are the trends? Well, I know it's the same in the States, but certainly in the last few years, the real sort of buzz thing has been audio. And, you know, there's been really fast growing audio sales. So it was up 43%. In 2018, you know, and that tripled since 2014. So we saw this huge, huge growth of audio sales. And obviously, people were listening to books while they were commuting. And again, you know, what came out of our virtual conference where people, one of the publishers was saying, well, actually, because of lockdown, audio sales haven't declined,
that's
or they
right.
haven't, they
that's
haven't
right.
done
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. I heard those numbers, yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously in terms of ebooks, there's been massive sales of ebooks and other digital content, and especially in lockdown. But to come back to your point, you know, the prices of those are much lower, so it is a challenge. However, you know, if you're an independent publisher and entrepreneurial by nature, you are going to be an optimist. You just have to be. And, you know, print sales, certainly in the UK, have been up for 5 years in a row. So they were just over $2 billion US in 2019, which was up by 2.4% in 2018. And so in terms of value, that was best year ever. obviously 2020 will be this anomaly because bookshops shut and all the rest of it. You know, you have to be optimistic to think that good content sells and the best publishers and independent publishers will find ways of getting that content out. I mean, so what we, you know, we IPG exist to help our members do better business, and we do that in a number of ways, but it's a really granular, practical thing about your metadata and discoverability and all the things that I'm sure IBBA does for your members, you know, trying to help people be aware of what they need to do on the key things. So in terms of economic downturn, that's a given. But I think sort of getting closer to your readers, reaching readers. I mean, gosh, we've been covering topics on this. How do you make sure that you're doing all the things that you're doing? And again, because we do have hundreds of members, we do like to cut a good deal with suppliers. So we're always trying to find a better deal for our members. And because we have hundreds of members, we've got some clout to negotiate.
On that point, you're talking about your smaller members who might find a lot of their analogs in IBPA membership, where the members tend to be small, one book or startup. You have a bunch of members like that too. How difficult is it for them to cope? You know, here, like the holy grail of being a small independent publisher is getting distribution, getting your books into Ingram, for example. And yes, getting into Ingram is not necessarily easy. You know, you have certain hurdles, certain milestones you have to pass.
Sure.
And you have to show yourself. Yeah. And if you don't get into Ingram, you're faced with doing your own distribution, which may involve you selling on consignment days to local shops, or basically going with Amazon because there's no other place where you can go. And I wonder if small publishers are as much locked out of broad distribution in the UK as they seem to be here.
Yes, in a nutshell. So basically, you know, distributors, they want critical mass. Sort of help with distribution is one of the requests that I get the most from my smaller members in terms of how can we do it. And so we are always trying to help our members, you know, or to identify. So because we actually have a type of membership called supplier member. Do you have that at IBPA?
So yes, you can vendor members, yeah.
Vendor members,
non-publisher members, yeah.
Exactly, non-publisher, exactly. So so we'll have distributors who are, what sometimes happens is some of our smaller members will form partnerships with some of our bigger publishers, and the bigger publishers will actually do maybe the sales and distribution on behalf of some of our smaller members. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we try to sort of connect people and put people in touch and all the rest of it.
Okay.
You know, that's not the norm. I should be very clear about that. But that's joyous when that happens, and people often find ways. And we have got a few of our publishers so it could be that somebody who used to work as sales rep has now moved over, got a senior position in a publishing company, thought, well, you know, we can take some revenue from that. So there is a little bit of that sort of, as I say, collaboration amongst our members. But you are right that many people are locked out until they are of a particular size, turnover, you know, selling enough every year kind of thing. And so they will then actually use Ingram, you know, Ingram's digital services as much as Ingram Spark, for example, as much as KDP at Amazon.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not easy, but actually that kind of collaboration amongst publishers is something that we really try to nurture.
I guess it doesn't sound like it's any easier or any more difficult in the UK than it is here. It's it's basically an economic issue, you know, size and reaching a critical mass where you become attractive to other people. So people do tend to, drift to Amazon for lack of a better option. What's the situation with Amazon there? Do they kind of dominate the bookselling landscape and people will buy from them simply because it's so convenient? They get, I don't know if the Amazon offers free shipping the way they do here, but you know, they have all these deals that it's very attractive, and it's, you buy your toilet paper and you buy a book.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Amazon are so consumer focused, aren't they, in a way that before I think we actually even understood what that meant, certainly in the UK. And the reality is, I mean, especially for us as independent publishers, you know, we represent independent publishers, so we really try to support independent booksellers in everything we do. But the reality is, Peter, that Amazon is the biggest player in the market, and consumers go there. And if you're in the business of selling books, you're in the business of making your books available everywhere. And there'll be different people and different markets will be, you know, getting their ink. So there will be people who, like real sort of diehard book people, who will only buy from an independent bookseller or a chain like Waterstones or Blackwell's. But what I would say for us, you know, we have worked hard to have a good relationship with Amazon on behalf of our members.
Of course.
And we do, and we have a really brilliant relationship with Amazon. Right now, through my contact there, he is excellent. And because we represent the long tail, it makes sense for them, because we could, they can work in shorthand with us, if that makes sense. So basically, every week I will get several Amazon queries, and I'm trying to build up obviously our knowledge bank. And if I, I should be able to answer X amount of questions regarding Amazon. And if I can't, then one of my publishing members can. But if not, we'll go straight. If it's something critical, obviously, then we escalate it and go straight to my Amazon contact. So, and I actually have monthly meeting with him. So I had one yesterday, and half an hour before, one of our members had an Amazon problem. And by the end of the day, that was sorted,
Totally. Yeah. I mean, most people can't reach anyone at Amazon to solve a problem.
That's the thing. And the thing is, I'm not allowed to give out contact details and things like that. And because they will say, and they actually are, their books team is a small team in the UK. So in terms of sort of reach, it just makes sense for them to come in, that we're the funnel, if you like.
Uh-huh.
And then, I hope when people are thinking about renewing their subs, they can measure their return by all the things that we do on that front.
Yeah.
But we would normally have, and what we have been doing, but again, and actually it should have been this week, we started having a standalone Amazon meeting. And again, that is because then people can come and meet some people, from the Amazon books team, and that's, from Kindle and from the physical side. And obviously they always want to flog their print on demand service as well. So then, they will come and that, but that's a really valuable opportunity to come and speak to people behind the scenes. Because again, if you can think how the other side thinks and try to understand how they work, then it's a less confrontational approach as well.
Yes, seems very, very important to be able to have a good relationship with Amazon. I won't ask you to say anything bad about them. And, I'm of two minds myself. But I mean, they sell a tremendous number of our books, so I can't dislike them for that. But
yes.
Boy, they put the screws to us, and every
yes.
year they want more tribute paid to them by publishers in the form of what we call co-op. I'm not sure what your term for that
yes.
is. I want to ask about one other thing, and this involves Amazon as well as you mentioned Ingram Spark. A number of the IBPA members are what used to be called self-publishers. The growing term is now author publishers.
Yes.
They may have formed a company to do business in as a requirement of their municipality, but they are basically self-publishers. And for years, we have felt that there's many, many good books coming out of the author publisher community, but they've had to fight an uphill battle against perceptions that these books are poorly curated, they're poorly edited, they're not nicely designed, they're not priced right, they can't, distribution is difficult, et cetera, et cetera. And it's only in the last couple of years, I think, that some of the big review media have actually been opening up their columns to reviewing books by self-publishers. There's much less of a stigma, and as a result of IBPA and maybe some other organizations, the books look a lot better too. People are much more aware of the standards of professionalism that are required by the industry.
I don't know what your, I don't know how many of your members would qualify as that, but do you find the same sort of lingering stigma in UK review media and booksellers, and do you feel that that's changing?
Well, Peter, I would like to tell you, I'd like to be able to say yes. I think it's really interesting. So to answer your question, first of all, about IPG and self-published, which over here are called, I guess, indie authors, they're called independent authors, which I think is quite confusing, actually. So, you know, we've had several sort of breakthrough authors who've done amazingly well and, you know, who obviously are extremely profitable. Probably in about 2013, we thought, we being, you know, the industry, everyone saying it's going to be this explosion of self-published authors coming along and all the rest of it. So we actually created a new membership category to, you know, invite people to join us. And it hasn't happened. It absolutely hasn't happened. So we probably have.
You mean they haven't joined you?
No, they haven't. Oh. They haven't joined us. Of our 650 members, we have fewer than 30 members who are self-published. But we do have in our supplier category, we have probably 5-10 members who supply services to the authors. So they might do some copy editing, proofreading, book design, or whatever, and they offer that service.
Sure.
See what I mean? So it's been quite interesting, and I often wonder, you know, what have we done wrong? Are we too, you know, business? Are we too, you know, because we are very B2B, obviously.
Yeah.
But we do exist to help.
Is there another organization in the UK that?
Yes. So there is. Well, there's an international one called the International Alliance of Independent Authors. I think that's what they're called. And we have a really lovely relationship with them. So in fact, they do lots of really practical things. And so, you know, that could be it. I don't know. We don't seem to attract, but we do have an awful lot of what I affectionately call corporate refugees, which is that's something completely different. So that's people who worked at a big 5 publishing houses who may have been made redundant or whatever reason they've left and they decide they want to create their own business. But what's really interesting about the whole stigma around self-publishing is that I can think of lots of big publishing companies, big established publishing companies, well-known brands, who have always had a side bit called contract publishing.
Oh, right.
So it's quite
sure.
So it's quite interesting if you think about the snobbery.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, well, they don't talk about that, and they don't put it on the copyright page either, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. You know, the corporate biography where the corporation agrees to buy 5 or 7,000 copies of the first printing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely correct. So there is, I'm aware that there's quite a bit of that goes on that's not disclosed. But to answer your question about, you know, is it still an uphill battle? I would say yes. I think it has definitely got better, and there are more reviews, but the interesting thing about reviews, Peter, you know, that gone are the days when the Sunday Times, you know, literary column or the Guardian or whatever, that was the real magnet of everybody went to there, if you see what I mean. So there's lots of other kind of influencers now.
Sure.
And blogs and reading clubs and, you know, sort of reaching, obviously it depends on who your audience is and who you're trying to reach, who your readers are. But I think that's obviously helped immensely self-published authors. So, you know, you sort of start with that recognition that, well, we probably won't get reviewed in the Times, but actually on XYZ blogs or, you know, on radios. And also there is that sort of can-do spirit of people going, right, well, I'll start my own podcast. And then people pick things up from there, or, you know, that kind of spirit.
Well, sure. And going back to COVID, we've discovered these virtual book launches have become basically book-selling parties.
Exactly.
If you had a physical book launch event, you might get 20 people. You might sell 15 books. Good for you. But these virtual launches can be 10 times bigger than that.
Yeah,
and as long as you have a mechanism by which people can order the books, they can be financially very successful too. But you know, you get names, you get a community, and you have lingering attention. It's turning out to be one of those things we were talking about previously, as something that started up as a result of a dire emergency and is actually going to be assimilated into standard practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and that's really, you know, a really positive thing. And can I just ask for the IBPA members, you know, has it been for them in terms of, like you say, you know, it sounds like they've been really entrepreneurial and found the opportunities amongst the challenges in terms of doing these virtual events and virtual book signings?
Well, reading. There's been a lot of excitement. I mean, one of the things that IBPA has been that did initially was that every month or every week on a Thursday, they would have a virtual meeting. And it was kind of first devoted to what to do about COVID and how are we all coping? How are we all getting up? Mm-hmm. But it's evolved into a kind of an online discussion of what's happening in the book industry. Here are some new things that are happening. Here are some people who are actually very active developing virtual communities and virtual book launches. Mm-hmm. Here's what they did. Ask them anything about how they did it. So these online forums, you might say, did not exist before, and now they do. And it's generating a lot of interest, lots of good ideas. I think people are under stress for many reasons, of course, but people are finding new opportunities and optimistic about some of the new tools that are suddenly becoming available.
Really heartening. And I think just sharing those, you know, I bet people coming and signing up to those forums and listening to what other people are doing, you're always going to feel better, aren't you? So kindred spirits.
Well, we're all sitting in our kitchens, you know, 24 hours a day. So, yeah, anything to sort of get out of the house, even figuratively speaking.
Exactly.
You know, it's really pretty good. Yeah, well, Netflix is having a good couple of months, of course.
They certainly are.
Yeah. Well, good. It's been great talking with you. I've been talking with Bridget Shine, who's Chief Executive of the Independent Publishers Guild, IPG. Thank you very much, Bridget.
My absolute pleasure. I've loved talking to you. It's
fun. And we'll get through this for sure.
We absolutely will. Yeah. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Bridget Shine of IPG in the UK. It's a bit comforting, I suppose, to see that publishers' problems are much the same regardless of where they're located. Revenue, sales, staffing challenges, and now, of course, the pandemic that is teaching everyone new skills in virtual events and digital communications. The assumption we seem to be making is that in the midst of this horror show, and both the UK and US governments appear to have failed their citizens miserably, we're developing sturdy systems that will live on into the future and maybe even set the standards for what publishing is to become. But, you know, I wonder if that's just optimism born of hardship and reflects the fact that we're really only 4 months in. What if this goes on and on? Many of us maybe are a bit like the squirrels stuffing nuts away for the winter. We can survive for a while, but at some point, maybe our time and our luck will run out. But, you know, this also makes me wonder, in the context of our international discussion today with IPG, couldn't independent publishers develop an entirely new international model of cooperation? Particularly English language publishers, where we have markets for our books on just about every continent, North America, Africa, the Middle East, Singapore, Australia, India, Europe, and even in Latin America among the university and professional readerships. Now, one reason maybe we haven't done this is because many of us have been trapped in balkanized distribution arrangements or flummoxed by shipping logistics and weird taxations and customs rules. But, you know, all those things are created by people and they could be uncreated by people just as easily. And as for shipping, with print-on-demand plans available across the world, why do we have to ship books at all? Air and ocean freight, as I've emphasized repeatedly, are environmentally destructive. It is obviously to the benefit of the big companies in each country who are in charge for them to remain in charge, dictating terms and discounts. Do you like having to give your lackadaisical partner in Australia a 65% discount to import your books and then not tell you what happened to them or even pay for them for 90 to 120 days or so? So just as the pandemic is forcing us to think of alternative ways of interacting, selling, and delivering in our own countries, I suggest that the same adventurous initiatives might be applied across boundaries. What if there was an international consortium of independent publishers set up to smooth the way, with local publishers each representing the interests of their foreign counterparts in their own countries in turn? Would this break any treaties? Would it make it harder for foreign shops and online vendors to get books to deliver to their readers? I doubt it. Instead, an International Publishers Association, imagine an IBPA or an IPG that spans the globe, would upgrade publishing standards worldwide. It would generate closer connections between authors and publishers and their devoted fans, no matter where on earth they happen to be living. And plus, it would bring much diversity and cross-fertilization to each culture. And if there's one thing we need, it is a better sense of each other's cultures and societies. Let's think about this as another positive response to a horrific pandemic. After all, we are one world sharing a dread disease, and that just makes obvious all that humanity has in common. They say the virus doesn't care where you live, your color, or your religion. And maybe publishing shouldn't either. Now, whether you agree or not, let me hear from you at Peter Goodman or at IBPA on Twitter. And as always, check out IBPA and all the membership benefits and resources at ibpa-online.org. I'm Peter Goodman, and as my bosses in Japan used to say, let's have publishing fun and stay healthy.